Listen, I'm fed up with the losing, and I'm fed up and I'm frustrated, and you know, it's definitely not an easy pill to swallow right now. It's been a tough couple months. It's been a tough 5 years with where things have went. So, you know, I'm a competitor. I want to win every time I go on the ice. I want to win the Stanley Cup every time I, you know, start a season. You know, I'd be lying if I said that. You know, I'm not getting frustrated with where things are going, and I'm definitely not in the, you know, greatest place with, you know, where the last, you know, little bits went, and it's definitely worn on me.
TSN 1200.
Welcome back. Welcome to it. 8:13 here on a Friday morning as we get set for the weekend. JR Simmer and Hammer, Pierre Maguire in mere moments. And those the comments of Buffalo Sabres captain Jack Eichel on the same day the Sabres announced that Jason Botterill will indeed be back as general manager. You got your captain unloading. Fed up with the losing, and I'm not here to suggest that Jack Eichel is asking for a trade or whatever, but that's not necessarily... I understand all of it, but, boy, I'm not necessarily thinking that's how the public persona of your captain you want in your marketplace.
Well, he had an MVP-type year, but this is part of the captaincy. It gets real old being in Buffalo, and it's a grind. They're passionate, but get in line with your good friends Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews. This is a long process for these high picks, and all three have something in common. They've won Jack-you-know-what, and so it's tough. But what I do feel like, hey, Toronto's got themselves in a good spot had it been done properly. I'll be quite honest with you, between Edmonton and Buffalo, maybe it's a goalie, but I still feel like there's some pretty big pieces that have to get into place before, hey, maybe you make a playoff, but I think you want to be a contender versus just squeaking in.
All right, without further ado, let's get the thoughts of Pierre Maguire from the NHL on NBC. Pierre, presentation, as always, of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
Really motivated, super motivated this morning, pumped up. Jack Eichel's got me going. Good morning, JR. Hello, John.
And what is it about the comments that you are listening in, like everybody else? What is it about Jack's comments that got you pumped up?
Because of the fact that he wants to compete. He wants to win. He's all about winning. I respect that about a player. That's what you want. That's high organizational standards. And if your captain's creating those, and I love what Sean said, because we talked about it right from the start of the year, that he was having an MVP kind of a year, and nobody was really paying attention. And Sean was spot on. And again, JR, you can go back and listen to what we said earlier this year, probably back in late October, early November. That's the kind of season Eichel was having. And I love the fact that he's pumped up and jacked up and angry. That's going to be good. I think it's a good thing, not a bad thing. Buffalo's a tough market. The fans there pay with their own money. There's not a lot of corporate season ticket holders there. There are a lot of real families that buy tickets. And I love that market. I do think they're heading in the right direction. And they'll have to address some things, but I do think they're on the right path. I really do.
You spend a ton of time in Boston. You go to a lot of college hockey practices. Of course, Jack Eichel played 1 year at BU, so you'd have a pretty good sense of what that player is all about. And there was a lot of criticism, Pierre, whether it was warranted or not, early on in him, is that he's selfish. Basically, he's running the team behind the scenes, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to ask you to confirm or deny that, but is there a difference of today's Jack Eichel compared to the Jack Eichel who came into the NHL?
Absolutely. I think when he was a 16-year-old kid and he was playing World Junior, he was Mr. Everything for USA Hockey, he kind of became entitled. And I think over time he realized that there's some tolls that have to be paid along the road, and he wasn't paying them all the time. And all of a sudden he started to realize, I got to start paying those tolls, and he is. And I spent a lot of time around Jack this year and around the Sabres, and I do think there's going to be a sea change there for the positive, not the negative. And I do think they're on the right track. And I think Jack's matured significantly. I also really like what Sean said. Austin Matthews is going through the same thing. Connor McDavid is going through the same thing. Nathan MacKinnon went through the same thing. There's a reason why they're first and second overall picks. They're getting picked by bad teams. The teams have been bad for a while.
Yeah, I think of Nathan MacKinnon, how long that's been. In the case of Eichel, no doubt on the ice, Pierre, but part of JR's question, is the maturity there and the respect in the room to lead the guys at this point?
I really think it's getting better, Sean, all the time. And I saw a difference from the start of this year to the middle part of this year when I was going into Buffalo. I did a Sabres game in Toronto where I was really impressed. It could have gone south in a hurry for the Sabres, but they kept it on the rails, and Jack was a big reason why. So I've seen growth that way. And I would tell you, If I didn't see it, I would say, you know what, there's still some room to grow. I think he's right on the proper train right now. I really believe that.
I do not believe with the goaltending tandem they have right now they'll make the playoffs. And if they're going to rush Luukkonen, if you have a goaltender, or if you're a Braden Holtby and you become a free agent, are they going to be forced to go out and do something very bold in goal?
I think they're going to try to do something bold with their team. I don't know if they're going to target the goaltending position or not, but I would agree with you. The way that it's built right now, I'm not sure that that's going to be good enough for them to make it. But they've got some young players. Their Rochester team, coached by Chris Taylor, has done some phenomenal things in terms of growth of young players, one of them being Casey Mittelstadt, who got, you know, really rushed into the NHL out of organizational need. And then they realized, you know what, we're doing the wrong thing for this guy. And they put him down in the American League, and he really started to take over. And I think that's going to be a very positive thing for him and for the Sabres. So there's some things coming out of Rochester that I'll use Victor Olsen as an example. He was well on his way to a 30-goal year this year had he not been injured. And he was another guy that was developed in Rochester. They've done some really good things with their development program.
Jack Eichel was not the only Buffalo Sabres star to speak out yesterday. Rasmus Dahlin also spoke, the first overall pick just 2 years ago. The defenseman said from over in Sweden, it's, quote, it's tough to be here in Sweden when all my Swedish buddies are going back and playing, and I'm staying here in Sweden and not playing. It pisses me off a little bit, actually, to not play right now. It's going to be a long summer, end quote. Would you have any concerns that your star player on the back end is feeling that way, Pierre?
He's not a star yet. He's going to be a star, but he's not a star yet, and I'm glad that he's angry, too. So if I were the Buffalo Sabres, I'd be directing somebody from the upper management team to get over there and talk to him and say, I hope you're going to use this as fuel to prepare yourself for next season, become much more consistent in your own zone and much more consistent when you're distributing the puck. Is he going to be a star player? Absolutely. But again, there's growth that goes into this. It's not that easy to be a defenseman in this league, let alone an 18 or 19-year-old defenseman on a mediocre team.
Pierre Dorion, the Sens general manager, appeared on our station yesterday, Pierre, on the afternoon show. You know, Pierre's become very good at being cagey with his words, doesn't get himself trapped in anything that can come back and haunt him later. He's maybe learned some lessons over the years. But one piece of information, there's a couple of things that sort of I took out of it. One was that he was asked about, hey, with so much uncertainty about where the entire game is going forward with salary caps, et cetera, you know, does that make your job difficult, et cetera? And he said, quote, we have a very good idea of what the financial landscape will look down the road. He's talking about, I guess, getting information from the National Hockey League. Behind the scenes, Pierre, do NHL teams indeed have a lot more information than maybe we've been led to believe about how this is all going to play itself out over the next 1, 2, 3, 4 years?
I think they're probably speculating on unearned income, what the TV numbers might be going forward, especially in the American side. I think they were hoping to get one number. They may not get to that number, and then that might change everything. But the one thing I know is they're very calculated with numbers in the league office in a good way, so that there is a proper information that's being dispersed. Revenue sharing is part of our league, Canadian Assistance Program. So there's a lot of things that they've got to be aware of when it comes to these programs, and numbers play a big part of that. To say that everybody knows exactly where it's going to be in a year from now, I don't think anybody can answer that 100%, with 100% certainty.
Pierre, was mentioned a month ago the possibility of 3 years of keeping the cap in around $80 million. I thought, oh my God, that's a lot. Would you ever see something as bold as the NHL ownership going to the PA and say, listen, we're business partners, we're going to roll the Seattle expansion money into the salary cap, basically, to kind of sustain it as a partnership and in good faith to try to extend the CBA?
I like the idea. I just don't see that happening. You know, each team, I think, is going to get a $20 million check out of the expansion, if my numbers are correct, so or close to $20 million. So I'd be surprised if we were going to see something like that. But anything's possible, Sean. I think the creativity of the idea is very good, very solid, but I just don't know if that can happen. You got to cater to 31 owners, and I just don't know if that would happen.
One of the other things Dorion talked about, and obviously Ottawa's got the two top picks, and he said, look, if we're lucky and we get one and two, the difference between one and two and if the pick slid as far down, worst-case scenario as 5-6, is that one and two potentially could play in the NHL next year. And you know, I didn't say he said this, but the implication was that 5 and 6 probably won't. Is that your read on the top players in this draft, that while a very deep draft and very good players available, that even at the top of the top end, that four-pick swing could determine guys who are NHL ready and not this point?
I think that's more than fair to say. Now, a lot of it depends on what the players do during this pause time, I guess we'll call it. There's some that aren't doing anything. There's some that are really working at it. So it depends on what players are doing. But I would say Lafreniere's guaranteed to play in the league, and I think he'll thrive in the league. Stutzla, I think, could be another one that could play. It'll be interesting to see with Quentin Byfield. It'll be interesting to see with Jamie Drysdale. Interesting to see with Jake Sanderson. I think after that grouping, I think it's a reach to say that anybody's going to be playing in the league after that. And again, it depends on your organizational need. I think Jamie's a good enough player, sense-wise, to play in the league. I just don't know physically if that would be the right move for him at this juncture. And Sanderson just needs to get heavier and stronger. He's big enough, and his frame's going to fill out at one point, and he skates well enough. Byfield's big enough. And then the top two guys are more than capable. But depends on what happens with the defenseman, because I think they play a big role in this.
In exercising patience, you don't end up with Lafreniere, Byfield back to Junior, Stutzla, wherever. If you ended up with Stutzla or Byfield, and then, say, Sanderson, could you see a situation for Sens fan, hey, be patient, a year from now, either the center will step in, Sanderson with a year playing next to Bernhard Docker, that they both could hop right into the NHL lineup a year from now?
Yeah, I think, see, that's the kind of thinking that really matters, JR. Sean's on it. That's managerial thought process for people that are confident in themselves. And you have to be a visionary, and you have to understand what your vision could possibly be. Some people just throw ideas out just to throw them out. That's a visionary idea from Sean. I do see something like that being possible, very possible. I think that's really a smart way to look at it.
All right. Sean Simpson, visionary. Okay, I like that.
I didn't think I'd be working in a closet on morning radio in Ottawa 20 years ago, but hey, I got to look ahead.
As I mentioned, Pierre Dorion was very cagey with his answers. And, you know, he says, I don't want to tip my hand, you know, asked about the picks. I don't want to tip my hand in any way whatsoever of what we're going to do. Asked about, you know, trading up, trading out, et cetera, et cetera. Are there some teams, Pierre, that have, I don't know, people behind the scenes that are going through every general manager's news Zoom conference, news conference, you know, every article that's written that's got quotes in newspapers, you know, right down to just to trying to glean a clue or two of maybe letting the cat out of the bag about plans for a draft? Like, do some teams do it, you know, to that nth degree?
They better be. I know we used to pay attention to everything. Back then, we didn't have an internet, but we'd have a clip service. And we'd be paying attention to the clips every single day. So the answer is yes. Now, information is king. Sometimes there's disinformation that's put out there. And you have to be careful. So that's when you study tactics and tendencies of people over the course of a period of time. But usually, most teams are monitoring everything that's being said. And you have people on the now, obviously, that you don't now. But a lot of times, a lot of this information is parsed in press boxes or in airports or in hotel lobbies, believe it or not, where sometimes scouts have, you know, too many ideas going on and they share them, and sometimes they share them with the wrong people and then it can be used against you. So you got to be really careful. That's why it's not always cool to run with the herd when you're in the scouting business. Sometimes it's better to be on your own.
Yeah, World Junior, the more pops you have, the more you talk. And just to take people inside, this would be pretty funny for you, JR. Back in the 90s, Stan Fischler had a newsletter, and that was basically the communication. You get that fax to you on, I think, a daily basis, Pierre, if I can remember.
Yes.
And Stan would make you pay for it. And if you didn't pay for it, you were afraid he'd write bad things about you.
Oh, no.
So all the managers had his newsletter. And it was a great way if you wanted to slide stuff in. He could slide stuff in for you for other teams, right? It was pretty funny to go through that, Pierre, back in the day, right?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. 100%. The lady that worked with us, Craig Patrick's personal assistant, her name was Michelle Coliani. She was outstanding. She still works for the Penguins. Just amazingly well-organized. And I remember I used to get to the office so early and work out and then break down tape. And as soon as I was done, you know, showering, you come back out, you're starting to break down more tape before practice, and the clip service was right on the table. And one of the things that was on there was a Fischler newsletter. Absolutely, Sean. Absolutely.
I won't ask you, maybe you'd share it, but maybe you won't. But thinking about the managers around the NHL right now, maybe the guys that have been around for quite a while, are there some guys who you absolutely know that that stuff coming out of your out of their mouth, any comments, especially regarding draft and trades and free agency in the summer, absolutely is said with a purpose as opposed to just answering a question?
Yes, absolutely. Messaging all the time. I don't give you names, but I could think of at least four that I would be pretty familiar with that are always trying to message that way. I know one team that is probably not interviewing too many prospects, and if they are, it's to probably lead people away from some of the guys they want to draft because they don't want it out there that they're actually interviewing people because they're really interested in those players. So you got to be paying attention to that too because there's a lot of stuff going on right now, especially this year. It's a far different year than any other year in terms of preparation for the draft.
At a draft, you have your manager, you have your head scout, or the guy that basically has done the amateur scouting next year, so not a big deal. But at the end of the day, how much of an advantage is it that a Pierre Dorion has run a draft? Because the art of doing that and maneuvering around isn't easy for a guy like a Rob Blake who really has no clue when it comes to that.
I think that's such a valid point, and that's the one thing. If you're, you got to know, when you're a player, never lose your identity as a player, and when you're a manager, never lose your identity of what got you to be a manager. So some guys were pro scouts, some guys were former coaches, some guys were just former players thrown into the office, and then they need to surround themselves with people that actually know the hockey business. But when you're an amateur scout in particular, that gives you, I think, a huge leg up on a lot of other people that are managers because you know what goes into preparation for a draft. You know what goes into developing a draft list. You know what goes into contacts for information on draft picks because you've been through it before. But the biggest thing is you know how to run the draft table. And it's a little bit more complicated than just throwing a ball up against the wall and see what kind of market's going to lead. You really have to understand the trials and tribulations of running a draft board. And it's a little bit more difficult than people think.
John Davidson met with the New York media yesterday. Of course, the Rangers are going to end up playing Carolina if and when the play-in round happens. And when asked about the goaltending, he said, as far as he's concerned, he said, look, coach's decision at the end of the day. But as far as he's concerned, any of the three guys in Lundqvist, Gorgiev, and Shesterkin are possibilities. If I had to ask Pierre Maguire right now, based on what he saw from the New York Rangers throughout this season, if you had to put one guy in the net for game one and hopefully win you a series, who would it be of those three?
Shesterkin. But you know how we were just talking about messaging? John Davidson's been at this for so long, and I think one of the things that really helps John, and he's a very, very good friend, is the fact that he was in the media. So he knows how to message so appropriately well. And by the fact that he didn't alienate Henrik Lundqvist in that discussion is brilliant because it motivates Lundqvist. It says, I got a fighting chance. It puts pressure on the other guys to step in and be ready if they do get an opportunity. And I just think that's what you were just talking about, Jared. It's so appropriate that you brought up that name of John Davidson because I think one of the things that's happened since he's gone into New York, it's deflected a lot of attention away from Jeff Gordon and Chris Drury, and it's allowed them to do their really aggressive rebuild, and it's allowed John to message appropriately with their market, which is such a media-savvy market. And it's made a huge difference. It really has made a big difference.
There's never been a person that's less, built for the media than Jeff Gordon. There's nothing wrong with that, Pierre. And you're so right, that face. I also hate this Lundqvist talk about, you know what, Hank deserves it. Nobody in the National Hockey League deserves anything. The best player should play. And just, sorry, third point. Do you think Panarin should be legitimately in the conversation for the MVP?
Absolutely, I believe he should. He's really helped redefine what the New York Rangers are all about. He's helped their rebuild explode unbelievably well. And the biggest thing is, even though Mika Zibanejad has been a tremendous New York Ranger, he's never been this good. And I think Panarin's been a big part of that, huge part of it.
Yeah, and there's not an official top three for the Hart Trophy, but I think NHL.com put out something that alluded to the fact that that I think Pastrnak is in with Draisaitl and is it MacKinnon? I'm gapping on who the top. Anyway, it was a lot of controversy that Panarin was not considered to be in the top three. So
yeah, as there should be. I think Sean raised a really interesting issue, but I can tell you, having done a lot of Rangers games and I watch every one of their games, the biggest thing is Panarin brought huge electrifying offensive skill. He's made everybody there better. He really has.
Well, Sean Simpson is a visionary, as I've come to learn. We've all come to learn this morning. Yes. And that's a good way to end the week. Thanks, Pierre. As always, enjoy the weekend, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again on Monday.
Be safe, everybody. Thank you very much for an awesome week. Matt Hamer in particular. Reaching out and finding me all the time. I love it. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you soon.
All 14 Meyers locations are open for sales and service. Check out Meyers' pre-owned Steal of the Week at Meyers.ca or just walk in. Meyers, always working to keep you safe.
Well, if you're in Riverside South and you're letting the Jameson sink in this weekend and you see a guy rollerblading by, potentially in a Speedo, oiled up with headphones in, that's our good friend the visionary, Sean Simpson.
Actually smelling good, too. The oil I picked up is a real nice base. Feel like you're at the beach. Also got a holster, one for my phone and the other for my bottle of Jameson. So I'll be well hydrated, lubed. Well, maybe not lubed. No, that's not the right word.
Oiled. Oiled. Greased. Greased. Please.
Troubling.
Please.
Oh, very, very troubling. Man, did Pierre have a... wow. Pierre was all over you today.
Actually, Lloyd, you texted me for stock tips.
You are so on it, Sean Simpson. That's the consensus.
Well, the only part of that, and we have fun with it, but the part of even, and I'm not going to say this is a throwaway year, but I don't see the year starting before January, and I don't see them getting 82 games in. And if I'm Ottawa, you take any scenario, but think about that, hey, instead of rushing anybody in, Byfield's back to Sudbury. Imagine if you drafted Jake Sanderson, honestly, a year from now, right. I could see him along with Bernard Docker and Byfield stepping right into your lineup. And it is hard when you get to the draft, guys, and I credit Pierre Dorion with the Formanton move when he sent him back. I mean, could his development have been any darn better than it has been? These things are tough to do at times, but that's where you just have to, you know, step back and breathe a little bit. And next year for Ottawa, you know, I'll say this, like I'd be, and I hope the owner's on board, I'd be disappointed if they don't get another top 10 pick, because there's no reason for them to be making short-term moves to try to push and, you know, be in the mix for a playoff spot. They're not there yet, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I think, and it will depend how the lottery balls fall, as it were, but if they don't end up with one of the first two picks, I'd be very surprised if any of Ottawa's picks this year, even though they'll have three high picks, and if they end up using all four in the second, if any of those guys end up playing in the NHL next season.
Other than honestly. Lafreniere.
Yeah, right? The one or two.
I mean, yeah, I don't. For sure.
And that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. And I would think that probably Stützle, for a smaller player that maybe physically has developed a little more, and the fact he played against Menlatin this year, you know, he might have a better chance to step in, but that doesn't matter 3 years from now that he'd be a better player than Byfield. I mean, I could even envision Rossi, for how mature he is. He could step into a lineup, but that's where you just have to be a little bit careful and just try to be patient as best as you can.
Yeah. Kevin is in a hammer with you. Simmer should rollerblade into Barrhaven and join the shiny dude for a quick trek. I'm sure he'd be up for it. Remember to wear your Speedo. That's from Kevin. So this guy is widely known in Barrhaven.
Oh, heck yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. You see him once, he's in your mind the rest of your life.
Okay.
Do you dream about him, Hammer? Like, is that what you're talking about?
It's hard to forget.
Yeah,
it's hard.
If we're gonna do a duo, though,
loves it.
He has to draft off of me. I'm not going behind.
You're not going behind.
No,
you're not going to be the inside spoon.
No.
Oh.
No, we're talking
inside spoon.
Drafting,
spooning,
but I would say in COVID times, you definitely want to be the first. Yeah, yes. Do not do any drafting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Six feet apart.
I like to blow my nose with my fingers in main strides.
Lovely.
So you don't want to be behind me.
Very lovely. Now, are you gonna skate across the Earl Armstrong and hit Barrhaven? You think?
Oh yeah. I've already mapped out a path there. There's another one I thought, and I got to get into it a little bit. Haven't done it for a while, so got to kind of get my bearings, make sure everything's good to go, and then at some point I'll do the path on whatever road it is goes all the way to Hunt Club. I figure that's a real nice path there, pretty flat too.
You can. There's a good app. I know that runners use it called, I think it's Map Your Route,
okay.
An app,
And if you want to say, hey, I want to go on a, I don't know, a 10K run, or in this case, a rollerblade or whatever, and just set it from where you start, and it'll show you where to go.
Oh, okay.
So it's pretty cool. I think it's called Map Your Route.
Yeah, I think Ryan downstairs, a good friend, the cameraman's always mapping out what he's ran, and Hammer's pointed it out too, right? I mean, don't most of these devices track everywhere you've been, Hammer?
Yeah,
I'll do that.
No, Big Brother's always watching.
Oh, no, for sure.
The Google machine is always watching.
Yeah.
All right, 844, a couple of wrenches on this wrench-throwing Friday. And again, if you got something on your mind that's been bugging you, toss a wrench at it. Feel good going into the weekend. After all, Wrench Throwing Friday's acronym is WTF, which normally you think of what the... All right, so here we go with Wrench 2 sends fans saying Ottawa got screwed. Last I checked, they've got the best odds at getting the number one pick. That said, I'm prepared for 5 and 6. That comes from Caleb. Wrench to Hammer for deleting the Vashon Cakes wrench at JR's request. From KFC Ryan.
Oh. Now, it did not happen that way.
And I can confirm that. Okay, I have not asked. There are lots of wrenches in which I sound like an idiot. I mean, you can give me an example right now.
Oh, heck
you want to toss a wrench at me sounding like an idiot.
You're back to talk some Seahawk win after Green Bay last night on TSN 1200.
That's a broken brain attempt there. Yeah. So, and there's more than a few, but unfortunately, we had a computer crash, and like Hammer did let the ball down, and in fact, we didn't have things backed up. That's sort of 101 in terms
the great purge of 2018.
Right.
Hey, we've got a decade of podcasts. If I truly, really wanted to, I can find that bad boy, just head to a Friday, and I will try to track it down and go through some of our WTFs and find that wrench, because no doubt that was a mainstay once a Friday.
Why haven't you? I mean, if you can.
Well, you know, once I walk out of the studio, I completely forget about it. I've got it in my head right now, but come 10:01, see you later.
Yeah. Do you have the helicopter jet engine?
I've got the helicopter jet engine.
All right. Helicopter jet engine to the Mini Police Department. I'm not sure what that. Oh, Minnesota. Oh, yeah. Mini. Okay. Yeah. Mini was spelled M-I-N-I. So I'm thinking Mini is in small. Okay. That would be M-I-N-N-Y. And I would have got the reference. Here we go.
Surplus helicopter jet engine.
Yeah, that's not to get too serious here, but man, that situation in Minneapolis right now, that is. We had a CNN, for those who weren't up earlier this morning, a CNN reporter was arrested live on television at around 6:30 this morning. Crazy.
Yeah, I was watching Fox Tuesdays ago, and I know it's the news. I know it's the U.S., and we know that the gentleman passed away, and they're still showing the footage of it. I don't need to see it. Now, it needs to be on TV. I think it's great. You know, the sad part of this, though, and I understand the Colin Kaepernick, and I'm not going to get political, but we went all through this with all the riots in Missouri. Four years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I just totally understand the absolute frustration. I mean, it's disgusting. And the frustration even with the governor and the mayor in trying to get your head around why the heck the guy hasn't been arrested. But let's leave that.
We're talking about
the
police officer. Yeah. Well, it didn't help things that I'm not sure exactly. You know, everything's a little bit different in the States, but the crown attorney who's investigated, the district attorney, I think, who's investigating this in the county in which it happened, essentially said yesterday he doesn't see that he thinks that they're going to lay any charges. And so that has now it was later clarified that there's still more information to be gathered. But, I don't if you don't think that you're going to lay charges, I don't think that you should say that you're going to. But I don't know until a decision is made. I don't know that that's the right wording, because that is just going to as we saw overnight, that's just going to escalate the situation.
Oh, this is taking you back to Rodney King. I mean, there's no doubt. And imagine frustration of anybody in the United States with what's going on with the world right now. No, boy, you're asking for trouble, like I said, and very, very sad to see.
All right, back to the text at 12-1200. Do you guys watch Bob's Burgers? There's a Speedo-wearing character in Bob's Burgers. So I'm not a Bob's Burgers guy.
No, what is that?
That's one of those Fox
animated show,
one of those cartoony Sunday night Fox shows.
Animation domination on Sundays.
Yeah. You're not a Bob's Burgers guy?
No, not a Bob's Burger guy.
All right. Yeah.
Haven't caught it, but now that I know that there's a cartoon character that wears a Speedo constantly, probably not going to check it out.
Okay. The farm team writes, just wondering what your thoughts are on this, but I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to finish bottom two or three next year and get another group of high picks to add to the system. Another wave of cheap talent to bubble up when the big dogs getting paid would be ideal. That's from the farm team.
Yeah, farm team, I have no issue. I think this would start to follow a little bit of, and this is all drafting, this would start to follow the model of what Toronto has. And if Toronto had done this properly, I think they'd be right on the verge, and who knows in a shortened season. But that is the biggest difference. You know, it's great to have all these picks, and Jack Eichel can get frustrated, and Connor McDavid, and Pierre pointed out Nathan MacKinnon. Like, I know this is a great organization, the Colorado Avalanche, and they're up and coming. When's the last time they won a playoff series? Like it's a long...
Colorado?
Long, yeah, 2014?
They beat Calgary last year.
Oh, okay. Well, forget that one. But
beyond, before that, it had been a while.
but to the point, they've been on the verge for a long time, right? It's a long, hard process. But for Ottawa, I hope that the owner is on board with, because I'll tell you what, this idea of bringing back Craig Anderson and Ron Hainsey and maybe getting some other veteran players, mixing with your young players and finishing just outside the playoffs, I'll tell you what, you'll sell a lot more tickets if you immerse all your young players and still have a bad team. People right now are really starting to trust the process and trust the plan. And in a very smart Canadian hockey market, they would have no issue with another top five pick.
Hmm. I get the feeling, and again, everything is up in the air, you know, regarding salary caps in this pandemic world we're in. So I'll say right now, I think Ron Hainsey is going to be back with the team next year. That's the feeling I get.
Oh, no, I agree with that.
I don't know, yeah, you know, and yeah. The whole thing, the whole good in the room thing, we have no way of measuring that as outsiders. Yeah, yeah, we're not in the room. None of us are on the bench. None of us are having conversations, privy to conversations the coach is having with the players, the general manager, et cetera. None of us know any of that.
Yeah.
Our eyeballs are simply on assessing him as a player.
Yeah.
What does he contribute on the ice? What he contributes on the ice certainly is not valued at $3.5 million. He's completely overpaid there, but the value goes beyond what he contributes on the ice. I think given where they're at right now with their defense and with Bernard Docker going back to school and with Thompson maybe coming over and probably ticketed to Belleville, I think there's a very good chance that Hainsey is back.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree, and maybe it is just one more year. And he played better this year, I will say. Did a hell of a job with Morgan Riley. The problem is he's not.
He did better last year, you mean?
Well, yeah, better last year.
Like with the Leafs, you mean?
No. He did better with Ottawa than I expected.
Oh, okay.
Like, I thought he was done. And now he got to about the 40-game mark, and it was a struggle. But he can't slide in and play with Thomas Chabot. Do you know what I mean? Like, with Morgan Riley, there was still enough there on his career where you could slide him in where he's a hell of a partner. Hey, this is also a guy that was drafted as a high pick as an offensive defenseman. Took him about 6-7 years to figure it out. Is that a long career? So I respect that. I'm just saying that if you're going to kind of go to that next level, if Ron Hainsey is part of your plan to mentor, that's fine. But if he and Craig Anderson and a few more veteran players coming back are there to try to make some called push for a playoff, that's where I think there'd be fault in it.
Do you see a scenario in which both Hainsey and Borowiecki are back next season?
You know what? You'd have to go through the defense because I guess on that side, you're already going to run into Zaitsev on the right side with Hainsey.
Maybe the Zuby Dooby Doo?
To Zuby Dooby. Yarosh is, I guess, getting pretty close. On the left side, you're going, Chabot to Willanen to possible. Well, Branstrom will probably go down. Then you're getting Naboro, and who am I missing? Who else? You've got the gentleman that came over from Montreal. He's back for another year.
Riley, gentleman.
Hey, I can't. I don't have the depth chart in front of me.
You're a visionary.
I know. Yes. I don't have that vision in my head right now. Then this will be. I mean, they talked about sitting down and wanting to make Mark Borowiecki
a
send for life. So I think they'll try to work that and take a say. I think you probably, if they wanted to go with 8 right now and keep Branstrom down in Belleville, I think there's a possibility both could be back.
And I understand kind of at this point, and Dorian has said, we're not going to negotiate any contracts right now, given everything is still so up in the air. But when you said last February or whatever, or March, that you wanted to make Mark Borowiecki a Senator for life, I would presume he's kind of outside of that sphere, that if that's going to happen, that you could do that. So any surprise that it hasn't happened? Mark Borowiecki being signed, I'm talking about.
No surprise. Do I think that as a manager that Pierre Dorion and McTavish and his staff have a vision for everything they want to do? Very much so. Do I think these things are slow to be checked off on to be able to pursue them? That to me is more the issue. I think.
Are you talking about ownership then?
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Like, I think there's lots of things here, and people have talked and things at times that you might want to end up doing. I think the hesitation on Connor Brown. Do I think they want him back? Absolutely. Do I think you roll into the big boss's office and say you're going to give him 5 years and he says, nope, not happening? Then you go on to phase two. So in the case of Borowiecki, I think Pierre Dorion would like to do that. I guess also now kind of understand where your roster is at, but I think it's a little hard to get things checked off at times where that should be a pretty easy one to do. I think you're right, because it shouldn't be. I mean, hey, you're going to go a couple of years. You're going to give him a little bump in salary, but it shouldn't be a big deal, big picture. And anything to do with budget or salary cap should have no real effect on it.
Right. We had Jeff Jackson, the agent for Connor Brown, on our show yesterday, and he indicated that Connor Brown, first of all, that the Sens, in the times they did have a talk, and there's no indication talks have happened recently, but in sort of talking about the concept of Connor Brown signing here, he said that the Senators were interested in a multi-year deal with Connor Brown, and that Connor Brown, his indication to his agent was he would be open to that idea. So when Steve Lloyd asked Pierre Dorion yesterday, specifically brought up Connor Brown in framing his question, talked about the importance of veteran people, this is what Pierre Dorion had to say.
We have a lot of great youth coming up, whether it's 3, 4, 5 players from Belleville impacting our team next year. We feel we've got a lot of talent that can come up and help us. But at the same time, we have to make sure we surround them with quality veterans. And it's making sure we keep those quality veterans. If some don't want to stay here, we'll find the replaceable parts. But at the same time, it's making sure that we have the right mixture of youth. Our youth keeps on progressing. And we have some good veterans that can show them the way.
What do you make of the fact that when, because Connor, the question was asked with Connor Brown's name in it.
Yeah.
The fact that Pierre Dorion, his answer, never mentioned Connor Brown.
Well, yeah, because I wouldn't make a commitment. I was
like, he could use the term like Connor Brown, but never went down that road.
No, but I read more into veterans that don't want to be here. Because the mysterious negotiation with Mr. DeMello, where no numbers were exchanged, well, obviously there was an exchange of, I'm going to either ask for the moon or I want out of here. I can't really go through the veteran players. Like, I couldn't get rid of Anisimov fast enough next year. Bodker's already out the door. Duclair is still a young player. On the back end, it's Hainsey Dvorvietsky. I don't know who you're pointing at. And I know on Twitter people have said, hey, you know, Connor Brown, well, someone said he's like Condra. It's like, come on. Then they talked about a 3-year contract. If I'm Connor Brown, and go back to what just happened with J.G. Pageau, right? And so follow a timeline here. I go to arbitration if I'm Connor Brown. I'm going to get a 1-year deal, probably around $4 million, right? Mm-hmm. So I go through that. I'm probably going to get traded at next year's trade deadline. Who says I won't sign a contract extension? Like, who thought that J.G. Pageau was going to get, what was it, 6x5?
Yep.
Like, he got $30 million as a third-line center. And I know Connor Brown's a winger, but he has to look at that. And anybody that thinks that Connor Brown is going to give up what could be 1 year to free agency and sign a 3-year team-friendly deal here in Ottawa, why the hell would he do that?
Yeah, ain't happening.
No, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, he's got this is his and part of it is the opportunity has been given him by being here in Ottawa that he's able to – you know, to play some power play, but to skate on one of the top two lines right now, and good on him for taking that opportunity and running with it and putting up a 43-point season.
Yeah.
This is going to be his opportunity here in this year or next year when he's a UFA, if he gets to there, to hit the home run contract. You probably only get one of them, one chance. This is his chance. He's not taking a hometown discount.
And what he's also shown, much like his rookie year, is that he can be a complement to good players. In this case, I don't even know who the good players are, but he put up numbers. If I'm the Toronto Maple Leafs and I reshuffle the deck and recognize where I went wrong, am I turning around and taking a run at this guy to bring him back to Toronto? In a heartbeat. I mean, so, yeah, that's where that sits right now. And I hope they get something done. But that was a comment that I was like, well, for the guys that don't want to be here, well, Artie Party wants to be here because he'd be nowhere else if he's not collecting a paycheck other than back in Russia. Boro wants to be here. So that was the one that kind of struck me. I was like, wow, that would be disappointing because, as I say, I'll go back to DeMello. On a lot of levels, money smartly spent on him versus having a guy like Zaitsev. These are all the small little pieces. Right. He's a complement to Shabbat, where with Zaitsev, and I say this, it's linked together, keeping Connor Brown here because he's not here. That Zaitsev contract looks terrible.
Yep. The thing on DeMello, if we're going to go down DeMello's road, though, and everything you said, I agree with. I think the issue is, because your job as a general manager is not only to look at next year's team, but 2, 3, 4, and 5 years down the line and what you've got coming up the pipeline and for the Sens with all the picks they've got. I like everything about Dylan DeMello, but he probably is in a position, based on his play, that he's going to get a 4-year contract with somebody?
Yeah,
at maybe
$3
million?
Yeah,
I'll throw some numbers out there. Yeah. I've never negotiated a contract, but I'll throw that out there.
No, yeah.
And if you're the Ottawa Senators, do you want to lock yourself into a guy who may, next year, based on who's here, might be your first pairing right shot defenseman because he plays well with Shabbat.
Yeah.
But 2 years, two seasons from now, certainly 3 and 4,
yeah.
He's at best probably, based on his talent level, a third pairing defenseman if he's on the team with your hopes of Thompson and Bernard Docker and maybe Jamie Drysdale or whoever you might pick.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
So your problem with locking into a long-term contract with a guy who is not, I'll go back to my old core player idea of long-term contracts to non-core players.
Yeah, I just also, with the investment made on Shabbat, if I could say for the next 2 years, that would work, where his play is sporadic right now and you're looking past it, right? Where now when they become a good team, I would like to have that. And part of what I think the vision was, sure, they want to get Connor Brown. Part of them thought, well, you know what, we might not be able to get DeMelo signed. Then you take on Zaitsev's contract at 5 years at $4.75 million, right? So you talk about a guy that, first of all, right now is not one of your core players, and I didn't like him paired with Shabbat, where that path, and that's, I guess, my bigger point is that...
But you don't want to double down on that, though.
No, for sure. But my point is Ottawa, in part of this whole process, has to stop that behavior of taking contracts for different reasons and signing bonuses being paid. And, hey, you know what? Just completely start making nothing dollar-wise.
Hockey decisions.
Exactly. Just 100% go down that path.
Our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question for you is this one this morning. Do you have faith that Eugene Melnyk and Pierre Dorion can follow through with their plan, the plan, to deliver a cup contender? What is your confidence level in the owner and the general manager? And we had the discussion earlier this morning that certainly in terms of the scouting staff and what they've been able to do, that there is a level of confidence certainly amongst the fan base on that side of things. And Pierre Dorion is a piece of that. But when you work into from ownership to general manager, what's the feeling? We all know that a lot of people in this marketplace are sour on the owner, to be sure. But right now, 68% of people, 68 to 32, saying, yeah, I am confident they're going to follow through on the plan. Boy, if you had to put that question out a year ago, you'd be flipping that and probably reducing it by about 20%.
Yeah, hey, people want to believe. I think even more with what we're going through. And I don't know with Mr. LeBlanc what he's going to end up doing. But the point that Pierre brought in, man, oh, man. And I think, you know, for John Davidson coming into the New York Rangers, I know Jeff Gorton very well, and he's a hell of a hockey man. The less that he has to deal with that, and for John Davidson as a president of your team, with the credibility he has as a player and a TV, to hop on, man, it's just such a nice scenario to have, right? Even the way Brian Burke back in the day used to deflect a little bit, right?
Exactly.
Get out in front of it. And it just allows the manager just to go out and do his job.
You know what they say, Simmer? Owners own, presidents preside, managers manage, coaches coach, players play. You got that box checked, every single one?
Yeah.
Guaranteed, you've got a good hockey organization, 100%.
Yeah, modeling, I would say, probably the Tampa Bay Lightning, right? Now, they haven't won, but that would kind of be the template, exactly what you'd want to be.
All right, a little past 9 o'clock. We'll get you the latest news from 580 CFRA. And when we come back, we'll celebrate some sports birthdays. We'll look at this day in sports history. We'll revisit Pierre Dorion's conversation. If you missed it yesterday with the boys on the drive, you can find it on our website. All of our interviews are there. You're certainly welcome to peruse things at tsn1200.ca. And while you're there, vote on our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question as well. As we carry on here on this wrench-throwing Friday, you are listening to Sports Radio, TSN 1200.